that talk scratching feet.
Okay, yeah, we're not very noisy.
Yeah. First of all, I get your birth date.
When I was born?
Yeah.
In November 1910. In a country called the Netherlands or Holland. You know, Europe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where I was born?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Little town.
Yeah, kind of. Don't matter. Anymore. Yeah, and?
These are, you're not following any of your order here, so.
You got a tuned in now, right?
Yeah, it's already going.
Yeah.
A little bit higher there. That's better. I guess you never took any schooling around this area then, eh?
No. I was, when I came to the Hadeland area, I was 42 years old.
42 years old.
Yeah, right. So then you sort of finished your education. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
What year did you come to Hadeland?
In 1952. In the fall of, it'll be 35 years ago this fall that you, that we came to Hadeland.
How many years ago?
35.
That's
right. That's a long time, huh?
What do you first remember about being in
Hadeland?
What did you think of the country when you first...
Oh, beautiful country, huh? The mountains struck us because we in Holland have no mountains. It's flat country. So when we came here, we were very impressed with the beautiful mountains they have here and the quietness of it. It's not that anymore. Those days when we first came to Hadeland, it was quiet. There were very few cars, really. You know. There were definitely no logging trucks. There wasn't even a caterpillar, a cat, in the country.
Yeah.
No, it was.
Help yourself.
Help yourself. People had their own. People had their own little sawmill, like Gordon Leary and Earl Simpson and Pete Muldo from the Kispiocs, and probably some people in your village. They all had their own little sawmill. There was no big sawmills nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
When people wanted to start a sawmill, they went to the Forest Service, which was. Two or three men and one or two trucks instead of what you see here now at the Kispiocs Road, and they applied for what they called a limit, I guess they call it, a limit, and so the Forest Service would give them a piece of land, they would set up the little sawmill and maybe employ six or eight people or even less, or maybe a few more, and when they were finished with that, the local man like Marshall Bros would come with the truck and haul the lumber away from them. And when they were finished, they went to the forest and said, well, we're finished here. Can we have another little plot of land? That's the way it was those days.
Yeah.
A little different now.
Yeah.
Now they tell me that there is 170 loads of logs coming into that mill here in South Hadeland and maybe partly in that new mill in Carnaby.
Mm-hmm.
170 loads of logs, and every load of log has about how many trees on it? I don't know. I've never counted them. Mm-hmm. A lot. Yeah, we found that it employs a lot more people, and consequently the Hadeland have grown an awful lot in the years. But we found it much more relaxed and peaceful those days. There wasn't the rat race. Of course, everybody tried to work and make a dollar, but not the rat race that you see right now. That people get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and rush in the bush to get more log, more cut down more trees. Somehow or another, it didn't. Doesn't quite make sense to me.
Where did you live when you first came here?
Right on the farm.
Right on the farm?
Yeah, the farm is across the river here on the north bank of the Skeena, in what they call Temlaham country. You've never heard the title, the thing Temlaham?
Moved there and I started a farm.
There was a bit of a farm there. I bought it, yeah, on the payment plan, of course. Like everybody, any poor immigrant, and we had we started out with about 40 acres, and over the years we, you know, cleared a little more land and got a few more cows, and then at one time I became the milkman here in the Hadeland area. I had all the milk business here.
Is something up?
I don't know. You got it tuned on, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the machine is running.
You better.
No, they'll hear it. They'll hear it.
No, that's a pretty good microphone.
Yeah.
The microphone, microphone is standing right in my nose here, so they'll pick it up. But, yeah, well, what else? Work, mostly. She got a job in the hospital. The first winter that we were here, I had a job in the mine here. You've heard of the Silver Standard Mine, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I had a job there, shoveling ore on the ground. And then that next summer, in the summer of 1953, that's another typical thing that might be interesting. There was a ferry at Old Hazelden to go across the Skeena, and we had to use that ferry. But in the wintertime, they took that ferry out. And in the summertime, of course, they had to have they had the upkeep of the ferry, and then they had to pay a ferryman. So that was pretty, for the public department high, was a pretty expensive deal. So they decided to do away with the ferry, like they did here in Hazelden, and a few years later did in Cape Maguire, and a few years later in Cedarville, and all these ferries are gone. And the whole Skeena is free of ferries except one there in Oscar by Terry. Okay, so, well, that meant that we people across the river there, we had to have some other way of getting home. So they built that road as you go past from here into the Kistbrooks, and you pass the Fourmile Bridge, mm-hmm. then just past that there is that steep hill going up.
Yeah.
Okay, they built that. I was one of them that helped build that road. That summer I worked for the public works. You think we had a power saw to fall the big trees in? The trees were too big. No, we did it with old Leo Golders and I. We did it with a crosscut saw and an axe. The trees that were too big for the cat to fall, it was a small TD4 or whatever it's the color, I forget. But anyway, the trees that couldn't fall, we fell by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's 35 years ago. There wasn't a power saw in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. That same summer, I worked for the public works on other jobs too. I remember we had to put in a culvert on the old Smithers Highway there, past, here out of Newtown, up the road there a little ways, by the side of Mud Creek. We needed some gravel. You think we had a little cat with a little bucket and load of the gravel? No, sir. The three of us had to fill this dump truck by hand.
Is that right?
Yeah, they had no where you go. Things were quite different. When in the wintertime, when they sanded the roads, they didn't have, well, they had dump trucks, or one dump truck anyway, but they didn't have that little machine in the back that, that threw the sand right on the road like they do nowadays. There was two guys standing in the back of the truck with the shovel, and that's the way they sanded the road. They had a hill to go up or something, and they wanted to sand it because it was slipping in the wintertime. Well, that's what happened. The driver sat in the front and put it in low gear, and the two guys worked a little butt off to get that sand thrown on the road. I'll never forget that. These are just a few examples to show you how a lot of the things have really, really changed here. And, in a way, life is easier now, yeah. Is life more pleasant here now than it was in those days? I sort of doubt it. It was, I sort of doubt it. I think it was more peaceful those days. People were maybe a little more content than they now. Everybody wants to make big money now and be a big shot. It wasn't that way those days. And then another thing is when you get big mills like we have now here in Southtown, and you get another one in Carnaby, you bring in strangers. So you have a lot of, you could say that's good, it brings business into town, but it's not like, there was a time that we as old timers knew everybody, whether it be white or whether it be native, we knew everybody in Hazelden, in Kistbjorks, in Glenfowl, in a lot of them in Harlingen, and as far as Kitchuk, I knew a lot of the people there. Now when I go to town, it's nothing but strangers. Of course, the young people have grown up, so I don't recognize them, but also people come in from outside, lots of people. All these teachers come in and they're all strangers, all these policemen, all these, I don't know what, but it's just not Hazelden anymore, I think.
You moved here with your whole family, moved down to?
We all came here in the meantime. The kids were little, I had four of them. And in the meantime they've all left and they got married and they moved up. Yeah.
No, not all. Teddy's still here.
Teddy is still here, yeah. Yeah.
So you just didn't farm, you worked out with
course, we had no money. I had $200 in my pocket when I stepped off the boat in Quebec, and I had a wife and four little kids, so things were pretty tough. And so I had the condition under which I bought that farm was I can buy it and try and make payment on it over the years, but I have to have a job first because I got to feed my family. So I was lucky that that mine here, that Silver Standard mine, was looking for people that, you know, were willing to work underground.
Do you remember who ran the mine?
Bill Dunn. Bill Dunn was the mine manager. And my foreman was Dennis Horwell. Dennis Horwell was my foreman. He lived there right for, you know, Walter Joseph, of course. Well, coming this way, right around that sharp corner, the first house on your right hand side, just before you go into that, can you imagine, you come from Harrogate, you go past Walter Joseph, then you make that sharp corner. And now you're coming this way, on your right hand side, the very first house. It's sort of a junky looting place now.
Yeah.
Just before you turn into that trail court, that's where Dennis Horwell is, a young fellow. He was my shift foreman, like you could say.
How long did you work there?
Worked there the whole winter, half a year, 6 months. And then in spring, of course, we had the farm, so I had to go back to the farm and do my farming, to get the stuff seeded.
And then you had a job to pay bookkeeper by Martin.
Oh, that comes way later. That was after that. Then I went to the farm that spring of 1953, and then I had to, when I was finished seeding, I had to get a job, and they wanted me back in the mine, but I didn't want to go there because, I don't know, it's not a very, underground in the mine is not a very nice place to work. And so I thought, well, if I can't find anything else, I'll have to, but if I can find something else, I'll take it. And it ended up being the public works. I was just telling you about that. Yeah. Worked there all summer, took a little time off to put up the hay, and then that winter, I was lucky. That fall, I got a job at what used to be called Marshall Brothers. You talk to your dad and your uncle, and they don't remember Marshall Brothers. Ward Marshall is still around, that's Scotty Smith. They ran a trucking firm, and I needed a bookkeeper, and I was lucky to get that job, so I did know a little bit about bookkeeping, so I worked there for 11 years, from 1953 to 1964. Every day of the week except Sundays. Yeah. In the meantime, you know, we made a little money to, not only she worked and I worked, and made a little money to get a few more cows and get a little tractor and create a little land and, you know, little by little, being very careful with your money and not wasting any. We managed to get a license to sell the milk, you know, from the government, sell raw milk, and so we became the milk people in Italy. Yeah.
There was New England, old South England,
I delivered milk not in Southland, it was too far from the firemen, that would take too long, but I did deliver milk for until 1965. In New Hadleton, Old Hadleton, and 2 Mile, and Anglican. Yeah. Gloria, what was her name? Gloria, I had a customer there in Anglican, I can't think of her name now. I don't see her around anymore, I don't know where she moved out or died. But anyway, yeah. Never made any big money, but we made a living. But then in 1965, we decided, well, the kids were leaving home, you know, they grew up and were leaving home, so I got short-handed, and the farm wasn't big enough to pay for a hired man or a hired whatever, and so we had quit dairy farming, and I went to work first for Bill Maitland in the Imperial Oil. You remember that Imperial Oil station at the corner of the Kisbrook Road?
Yeah.
Right there. I worked there for a year. And then then my last job was butcher in Sergeant Store. You've heard of Sergeant Store in Old Town. Yeah, you're old enough to remember that, Bill Sergeant. Well, that was my last job, butcher in Sergeant Store in Hadleton. When we came to Hadleton, there was, the streets were dirt, and they were either mud or dust, depending on the weather. Sergeant's hotel was down by the river, where the library is now. That's where the bus stopped. That's where I got off the bus the first time, yeah, I remember. Then it burned down. Sergeant, in 1956, I was already working for Marshall Brothers, which is the village office in Old Town now. And Sergeant's store, that big store that used to be built, Sergeant's store was built in 50, in the year 56. And I saw it being built every day. Yeah. It took him about 8-10 months to build it. Yeah. Well, that's briefly what happened, you know. My oldest daughter was finished school, and then she, one year, she in about 1956 or 57, she became a teacher in the school in the Kispert Valley, on the way to Mary Ellender. The school isn't there anymore. But I remember having, she had no car of her own, of course, she was just out of school, so she didn't have money to buy a car. So we had to pick her up on Friday night and take her back on Sunday afternoons. And boy, oh boy, if I think of that Kispert Road, what it was like those days comparing to now. I'm telling you, Howard is your name, huh? Howard?
Pardon?
Howard, is that your name?
No, Joseph, Vernon Joseph.
Vernon, oh, I got mixed up. Vernon Joseph, yeah. But Vernon, that Kispert Road was something. Mm-hmm. That was something. They had it in places, they had a corduroy. There was so much mud there. Right around where the former bridge is now, just on the other side of it from here. There was one spot I remember quite vividly. You had to go over there, and in the spring they would just cut a bunch of small trees and put them in there crossways, you know, to keep people from sinking outside in the mud. Yeah, now it's paved and...
Now there's no pavement.
Well, of course the Kispert Road is paved.
Landers have to do a better job. Well, still all called big holes.
From here to from Hadleton to Kispert is all paved. I mean, it's just as good a road as any paved road.
So your kids are all grown up in the...
Yeah, we had Teddy, my son, who's on the farm, and he never married. He's 41 years old. And then we have three daughters, and they're all in Terrace, and they're all married and have a family, and all doing well. They all worked hard. Yeah. The older daughter, as I was just telling you about, she's still a teacher.
Yeah. So
Teddy
runs the farm pretty well.
Yeah, Teddy is pretty well, king of the farm there, yeah. I go out there, and we go out there in the summertime a lot, you know, we were there just yesterday. But he runs the show, he's old enough, he knows what he's doing. Yeah. It never was a great money maker, but at least we made a living there, and it was a way of life that we all liked.
Did you enjoy your stay here in
Hilton? Yeah. Well, my wife was pretty sick there a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, and so we decided that we had to run to the hospital a couple of times. So we decided it was safer to be a little closer to town. A little more, you know, it's a long ways out, and we had to run in at night there if we heard a couple of times, and so I didn't think it was wise to stay any longer on the farm. Especially since if we had nobody there, but Ted is there, and so things are well looked after. So we decided it was time to retire. She is 74, and I'm 76, so, you know, we're no spring chickens anymore. Yeah.
You worked in the hospital. How did you find that work in the hospital?
Good. I like it, yeah.
What are your duties there?
All kinds of jobs.
Cleaning floors.
Cleaning.
Just cleaning mostly.
Night kitchen and nursing home. Now doctor.
Yeah. How long worked in the hospital there? She lived down there at that one when I was there, that old hospital they tore down. That's where she worked.
Nurse's home, you mean? Your mom?
And my mom worked down there when she was young.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
She worked down there for one summer.
Oh, really?
And what year she said?
I was on the time of Mrs. Lum and Cora Craig and Martha Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the old Mrs. Lum, you remember? No, you probably know Mrs. Lum. You said, well,
no,
actually,
it's
Mrs.
Not
Sterrett, Mrs. Sterrett, no.
Oh, yeah.
It's, what's her name? Neil Sterrett's, old Neil Sterrett's stepmother, like, you know, old Charlie Sterrett, the old man. He married Jessica Lum. She was working there, yeah, of course. And Irene Patsy, and Jesse Green, and Martha Brown, yeah, and Cora Gray, oh, there were so many of them. No, it's all the younger than Mary Smith, Joe Smith's wife, you remember her? She's still around, but she doesn't work. Yeah, that's all a long time ago. That was in the 50s. I say the thing that has struck us about Hadeland is, like any other town, it had grown so much, and it's just like people. The coherent. There isn't, you know, people are not as closely knit as they were. Just like a family, you know. Family is closely knit or it's not. Well, Hadeland was at one time closely knit. Everybody knew everybody and everybody. There was never any argument. Now you see natives stand up against whites and whites stand up against natives. None of that. We were all friends. We were all in the same boat. We all tried to make a living. And, you know, it was different, very different those days. And I missed that. You know, things don't go the right way in my book. It's not, we're not going in the right direction. Definitely not. There'd be much more controversy. There'd be much more animosity. There'd be much more jealousy. I don't know what it is, but it's something in the mind of people, Indian and white both, that sort of worries me. There isn't that close friendship anymore that there was. It's too bad, I think. I still feel great when I walk in town and old Pete Muldoon is in town. He walks up to me and shakes hands with me or Steve Morrison or any of the old timers, like, you know, they still consider us as friends and I consider them as my friends. Starley Smith, Joe Smith is dead, and Charlie Smith is still around, and Jeff Wilson and all these people, and the old times. The young people don't even look at you anymore. They have no feeling of family tie or community tie, and that's important in a small town. In the city, it's different. You know, you live in Israel, you were in Prince George, you were in Vancouver. You can't know everybody in Prince George. You can't know everybody in Vancouver or Victoria. That's impossible. Here in Hadeland, there's no reason why we shouldn't get along. And I guess most of the older people still get along quite well. But there is something about the young people, white and Indian, that bothers me. They just don't have that community spirit, I think, that was there at one time. Maybe less respect for the elders, or I don't know what it is. Yeah, but then maybe I'm too pessimistic about it. Maybe everything will turn out all right. Yeah, just a little thought of my own. What else, Vernon?
About your school, the schooling your children had.
They all went to school here, and they all finished grade 12 here, graduated. My oldest daughter went into teaching, and she eventually became a principal of a school in Terrace. The second daughter, she works at the sawmill there. They're all married. She works at the sawmill there. Her husband works for the Indian Department. Jerry, you probably will remember Jerry Cook. He worked for the Indian Department. In Terrace, but anyway, he has a lot of.
He wasn't born yet.
Oh, he's 27 years old.
Yeah, but yeah, he's up 25 years for the department.
But anyway, the younger daughter became a nurse, and she runs the operating room in Terrace in the hospital. So she's done well. But they're all doing good. Well, a nice family. No, we're quite a happy family. No complaints. What else? Something that I want to say very badly. I can't think of anything right now. You just keep on shooting questions, Vernon.
Okay. Do you really involved in any school boards or interact?
No, I'm not a. No, that's one thing that I lack. I have a community spirit in the sense that I try to get along with everybody and have a lot of made quite a number of friends in this area. I think. I can say safely, but I'm not a guy to go to meetings or put myself in the forum and say I want to change this or I want to do that. That's not my makeup.
So weren't involved in any community?
No, I'm not a member of any church. I'm not a member of any school board or no. I've been asked a few times whether I'd be interested in doing this or that. I've always turned it down because, I don't know. As I say, in the years on the farm when the family was, when the kids were young, you had to be on the farm for the sake of all the work there was to do and for the sake of the children. You know, I didn't want to be a father who was always running off to meetings here and things there. You know, I felt my place was at home. And that becomes a habit, and so I still have that habit. We're always home. Well, we travel, you know, quite a bit to go to Smithers or something, to Terrace as a kid, so to do farming. But I mean, we don't belong to any association, and I don't even belong to. I have a political opinion, but I don't belong to any political party or no. I never got involved in community affairs like some people do. I just don't. I wouldn't say I don't believe in it. I'm glad that somebody else does it for me. Let's put it that way. Somebody has to do it, you know, and I appreciate that some people really go out of their way to. Well, this building here wouldn't have been here if it hadn't been for a bunch of people that became very active in community affairs and start, you know, making presentations to the government or whatever. But if everybody had been like I had the attitude that I have and I have all of my life, this building wouldn't be here, and a lot of the library wouldn't be here, and a million other things wouldn't have been here. So I appreciate what these people do, but I'm just not the type. When we first came here,
the first time when I passed,
you hailed, and I'm trying to remember because I delivered Milky for I don't know 10 years at least. There was hardly anything really. If I drive through Newtown now, you know, in the back streets there where all these beautiful homes are, and some, none of it was there. There was there was a few people, you wouldn't know them anymore because they've been either moved or died, but there was Dave Jordan, and there was in the back here, off the highway, like there was Cornelson's Cabins, and what's the laundromat now, and McKinnon's Summit Hardware, that was Cornelson's Cabins. He had a bunch of cabins in the laundromat, and then in that street, there was where the bus depot and Simpson Sears is, there was Rusty Smith, and there was Mrs. Wood, and there was Herman, who worked in the mine, and there was Carl Christensen's brother, Ingmar Christensen, and there was Bob Allen, and then there was Pete, what they call Pete Hayes' house, and then at the end, further this way, there was Old Lady Sargent, you know, the mother of all the Sargents that used to own the store, not in the Old Town, but in Southtown, John and Paul Sargent. And further back towards the mountain, there was nothing. There was just nothing. And all the streets, if I drive through, I know that there is dozens of houses, and I don't know nobody who lives there. I don't know of anybody. You live in Newtown. Where do you live? Well, up towards the mountain. Yeah. Don't know anything about it. No. Newtown was very, very small. The station, of course, was still in operation. There was a station agent and an assistant agent. That was full, and later on it was, who the heck was he?
We must go to bed.
Ernie, go to bed was the assistant agent. But then there was, I can't think of his name now. He was there for years. I lost the name. And the old the highway, you came into Hadeland. If you were coming from Terrace and you wanted to go to Smith, you came into Hadeland. I have an argument whether that bridge here, the railroad overpass, was there at that. It was there at that point. But whether it was that bridge, I don't think so.
No,
it was
a new bridge.
It was an older bridge, right?
An old wooden bridge. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly, that's right. Somebody argued that. Somebody said, no, when you came, there was already that steel bridge. I don't believe that.
No, that was just built a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Oh, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, not so long.
It wasn't too long ago.
Oh, more than that.
No,
oh,
this isn't so long ago, huh?
Oh, more than 5 years ago, yeah. At least 10, probably more like 12, 15 years ago.
Well, yeah, it was, because I was still in St. Mary's, and I remember seeing that bridge. Yeah, because I remember
they were building it at the time, yeah?
Yeah, because I remember there used to be an old wooden bridge there.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They went around it and came up behind.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, that's what I remember. Okay, and then you had to go to Terrace, to Smithers, like you came from Terrace and you went across that railroad bridge and you were in Newtown, and there was the Totem Cafe wasn't there. There was the New Hazel Cafe where the deli is now. Was that the New Hazel Cafe? Yeah, where the deli is now. That deli.
Before was an Alma Cafe.
And the hotel was different. They did a lot of work on the hotel. It was there. They did a remodel. The Totem Cafe was built around in the early 1960s. Ping Yi, you remember Ping Yi? Sure. Yeah, he's not in Williams Lake anymore. We used to drop in at Williams Lake and try and talk to him, but he's gone now. But anyway, and then you went past, and what was there in Newtown? And there was the bank was there for a while. That's the place where they have the fisheries office now. Yeah. You remember that? And yeah, there was a bank at one time. Then that building where they have the courthouse now wasn't there. Play again?
Yeah.
So anyway, then you came with the courthouse is now, and then you made a left-hand turn there. You go that little street that's still there,
yeah.
And you came around the corner and you went by the old Willens garage, that old dumpy building is still there, and you went by there, and then you crossed by, right behind where that motel is being built now, that two-story building that's putting up there, and you went straight across the old station road. And you went by Louis Parent, that house wasn't there when we first came here. He wasn't even married, I guess, when we first came. Louis Parent.
Oh, no.
But anyway, his father was the station agent here. He lived there down where Delcor Parent lived, in the duplex there by the station. That's where the house was, old people's parents. He was the station agent at the time. Well, anyway, you went to Smithers and then you followed that old Smithers road. You know, you've been probably through there. Right, and you came out at Mud Creek and down you went.
Well, nu waren we de Spanish took us. We had to take bread along and something to drink. It took us the whole day to come there.
Yeah, in the morning we had to milk the cows, of course, and then we had to do something in Smithers, or we failed the kids. We had a day off. So my sister lived in Smithers, so we planned a day to Smithers. In the winter we never went anywhere, never ever. But in the summertime we made maybe one or two trips to Smithers, and it took all day. Yeah, you had to be back by 5 or 6 o'clock to do your chores again, and in the meantime you had to rush to go to Smith. The road was that bad. Canyon. Ooh. You remember that the old canyon road? You remember that you went way up there?
Yeah, way up and then way down.
That was about 1962 when they finally opened the road as it is now. That was a pretty wicked road, yeah. I remember in 1960 my sister came to the wedding of one of our daughters. And they ran off the road. They were up in the canyon and they met somebody, and somehow or other, I don't know, the kids were driving again. And my sister was in the back, and the whole shebang went off the road in the canyon.
Right?
Fortunately, there was a bunch of trees that they hung up on that could have killed them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in 1960, so that new road was built in 62, I think. Two Mile was very, very different to Garden.
And being in the house, that was beautiful there.
That winter I worked in the mine, the very first winter. We couldn't live on the farm because they took the ferry out and the road hadn't been built yet. You see, it didn't connect up with the Kisberg Road yet. So we had to move off the farm to get that job and keep it. And so we rented a place in Two Mile and lived there all that winter. There was nothing in Two Mile. There was just, I bet you, in that lower part of Two Mile where Bruce Parker lives and where all these people live there, you know, there was not more, there was two or three old bachelors, Hugh McMillan and Barney Moe or some name, and Mrs. Dodding, Dave and Lloyd Dodding's mother, she lived there, and we lived there, and that was about all. And then you had Upper Two Mile, a little further up towards the towards Collins Lake, you know, and that was there was no school out there, and there was who lived there? There lived Valencourt, who was the horseman in the mine, and there was Martha Brown, who was married to Gordon Fargy. And Virgil Jensen lived there, and we think from it worlds, and Bill Ludwig lived there, and that was, and maybe one or two houses more, and that was the end of that one. In the whole of Tumel, well, maybe two were, oh yeah, and then of course there was that part here who lives there now, Sandover Sly and those people there, the first part, how can I explain that, you know what Alan Bence's place is, okay, you turn in there, come from here, you turn into the Silver Standard Man Road, and then you make a left-hand turn, just a little within there, before you get to the creek,
yeah.
And come back, you go back as if you were going to the hospital again. Now there was a number of houses, there was Olson, old Mrs. Olson, Charlie and Mrs. Olson, and there was Norm,
Hindle.
There was
Chris Hindle was living there.
Chris Hindle would live there, and Lou York, Ward Marshall's father-in-law, and one or two more, and that was about all for him. There was just in Tuma was nothing. And then Alan Benson lived on the corner, yeah. And on that little stretch by Alan Benson, there was Benson, the Stan Benson lived there, and Mr. What was the fellow that was the bookkeeper in the hospital, Mr. I forget his name now, and then there was Jack Stratton, well, he moved
yeah,
a little
later.
Yeah,
was almost much later.
Yeah. And then the old ferryman, Frank Pipe's brother-in-law, he lived there. So all in all, if I added up quickly, I would say there was 5 and maybe 6, 11.
Maybe 20
and maybe, yeah, there maybe 20 mid-20 houses, 20 places there. That was the whole of Tuma. Now you go back there, and my God, you go to the cemetery and you drive through all these little streets there. Man, and life there is—it's just like a city, man.
Yeah, I know. You go back there.
Oh, man, well, look at that graveyard road where Keith Marshall lives and Dave Greenhall and all those people—it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, but
there was nothing
too.
There was nothing there. Well, he even remembers that. Yeah. Yeah, very sure. Things have changed. The more I talk about it and think about it, the more I realize how Hazelton has grown. It just busted out of its seams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, too bad, I think.
What about Hazelton?
I already mentioned the dusty street,
yeah.
And I already mentioned the board sidewalks.
Yeah.
There was no paved sidewalk. And I remember that big open spot.
You know, the Chinaman must go to the river, not met in the. Sure,
yeah, you know,
stick
how
they carry
the stick with two veils, one on the front and one on the back, and a big stick on the shoulder, and it's how the Chinaman carried water from the river, yeah. We never, that's one thing I regret. I wished I had lived here when the river boats were still coming in, but that's already, but that was in 1912 or something.
Yeah,
like
that was quite well,
yeah, long before we came. I'm not too sure what year, though. Somebody has told me that. But that would have been really something.
Yeah,
I would have
seen,
liked to see that.
Yeah, I'm hoping somebody...
Yeah, you see pictures of it, you know,
yeah.
There is still pictures of it. Sergeant's store was an old black building in, just about now where the far end of the bank is, in that corner there. And the theater, Birma store and theater was the community hall. That building was the community hall, and they had dancers there, and they showed an occasional film there. And on that big open spot there, between the two buildings I've just mentioned, the old sergeant's store in the back, the bank wasn't there, and the community hall, which is Beerham, but no, there was one long shed, sort of right there where you drive into the parking lot, into the bank parking lot,
yeah.
And that was Bill Sergeant's freight shed. That was the shed where they. And across the street there, across from Beerham, there was the Indian office was there, but it was much smaller and an older building. And right next to it was the old telegraph office. If you want to telephone or telegraph, there was the old telegraph right next to the Indian Department. Freddie Wales' house wasn't there, but there was an old house right under the big cottonwood where you make that sharp corner to the old police barracks. Yeah, that's gone too. The police barracks were there when we came.
The church is down.
And then the Catholic Church, well, you remember the Catholic Church, they just tore that down here a couple of 3 years ago, on the corner past the old police station there in Old Town, where you come back. And on that little stretch by the river, they call it, well, River Street, or whatever you call it, there was...
Government Street.
Government Street, yeah, right. There was Bev Hobbs lived there. Bill Sargent's on the left-hand side was Bill. Oh, yeah, that was interesting. You remember, do you know Bill Sargent's old house by the river? It's just next to the library, going towards Kazan.
No, not the going, the second one, is it?
And right next to it was the Chinaman, and he had a laundromat there, and I used to take a bath there once a week. We had no running water, so I went to Mercy Loring, was working in there. She was doing the ironing for Lee Chong. He had the he had the laundromat in that building. Later on, they used that same building for the bank.
Is that right?
The bank from Smithers used to come in here two mornings a week, I guess, from 10 till 2 or something like that. And they had banking hours there.
Is that right?
Can you imagine? That just shows you how Hadeland has grown.
Yeah.
There was a car came, or a jeep came in from Smithers with one or two guys in it, and they had banking hours 2 days a week. It seems to me it was on Tuesdays and Thursdays, in that little old laundromat right there by the river, on Government Street. Now you go into the bank here. It's open every morning from 10 till 3 or 5 on Fridays. And sometimes you have to stand in the line there for half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, that just proves you how Hadeland had grown.
Yeah,
just unbelievable.
No one knows when he goes out the door. You know.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. Then they finally decided well, it was time to have a bank in. So they had that bank in, they moved that bank, and they had it in the fishery building here in Newtown, where Don Herman had his plumbing shop at one time. You remember that?
Yeah.
Right, that building. Okay. And Dick McAdam was the manager. And then they finally made a deal with Bill Sargent. After he had built a hotel, I guess it was already part of the deal, that they had the bank down by next to the bar in Old Town, right next to the bar. You know, they have the pub there now, I guess.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, okay. Or the cocktail bar. And then they made another deal with Bill Sargent, and they figured they need something bigger. So then they had Bill Sargent build the present bank. Bill Sargent built that.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were renting it. Maybe they're still renting it from him. I don't know that. But anyway, Bill Sargent built it, and the Royal Bank moved into its present quarter. And now they should really start thinking about building a bigger bank again. Because it's getting
better have a different bank. It's
getting smaller. Yeah, that those things prove how big Hadeland has grown. Then there was right in the center of town, there was that service station that's run by Alice Maitland now. That was John Carson had it when we came there. John and Olive Carson. Then going further towards the hill, towards Smith, what they call Smith Hill, there was that garage. There was the service station. There was the garage, and then where the liquor store is now, that used to be the old, or the end of it there. That used to be the old drugstore. There was an old drugstore there.
Nice.
Not talking about the drugstore that Alice Maitland had. Across the street where they had the video shop. That's the new drug. That's a newer drugstore. But the old drugstore was past Larson's Garage, right there at the end where the big...
Bill McGowan started there.
Right, where the big trucks delivered the beer now, right there.
Yeah.
Then you had Boots Powell's Cabin. It's still there. That's the only... And then the very last house, I guess, belongs to the council or something like that, the bank council, is that big house on the...
Yeah.
As you go to the hill on the left-hand side. That was Myers, Mac Myers built that.
Yeah.
He lived there?
Yeah. No, he didn't live there when he arrived.
Dr.
Lazarjuk lived there. He was a doctor and his wife lived there, but it was on that. They called it Myers' house, yeah, Myers' building. And across the street, now at the foot of the hill, there was, I forget who lived in there, and then there was George Martin. George and Flora Martin had a place that sort of next to. You know, now they have remodeled, the natives have taken that over to that building from Myers, the old store, Myers store,
mm-hmm.
that big building there. But
yeah,
that's
the travel council, that's where I work.
Oh, right, okay,
yeah.
Well, you know that building. Next to it, towards the hill where I come and starting up, going back, there was two places there. One was, I try to remember who lived there, who the hell lived there? Several people lived there. George Martin lived in the other one, but, Joe Panther. But there must have been three houses there. There was a little cabin right at the foot of the hill.
Listen now, is that Billy and the son was working in the Hudson Bay with Gerard. And his father was...
Gates?
Huh?
Gates? No, I don't remember. I thought they lived in two.
No, he was
But anyway, then
there.
Was, then there was on the next to that building where you were towards the hill, there was... There was Joe and Marie Panther, right, very next place to where you work.
Mm-hmm.
and then towards the hills, the next house was George and Flora Martin. And now you know where the cenotaph is in Oldtown by the Anglican church there by the river, the war memorial thing?
Yeah.
Well, that's where old George, that same old George Martin had a garage. He had a garage there. Taken over by Charlie Clifford later on. George Martin was the father of, stepfather of Eric Genzi and the father of Roddy Martin. You must remember Roddy Martin. And who else? But anyway, and then you had Myra's store. And then that house on this side, I think they're remodeling it again. Between your building and the BC Cafe, there is one house, and I think they're working on it again.
Yeah.
And that building, who lived there when we came, I can't remember, the house was there.
The teacher, Miss Cook.
Miss Cook lived there at one time, yeah. And oh, a lot of people have lived there, yeah, in that house. That was there. And then you had the BC Cafe, which was much the same. They did a little, they put that ghastly, they still have that ghastly aluminum siding on that house? Or is that
just on one side, I think they picked up the front side.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That picked up a lot in Hedland. A lot of people laugh about it and say, now where the hell do you all need all these old style front buildings? And I like it.
Yeah.
Now at least you have the feeling that the Hudson's Bay and the liquor store and all these other buildings, they all have a bit of a common style, you know, of the old days. I like that. I like the Alpine style in Smithers. You go in Main Street there and all these buildings have something that reminds you of Switzerland. People say, well, that's ridiculous. We're not in Switzerland, we're in BC. Well, okay, whatever it takes to make a town look pleasant, I go for it. I mean, why criticize it? I think it's very good. And I think in Hedland, Alice Wayne has done a wonderful job in, you know, revitalizing the town that way. It's not a messy town anymore.
No.
It's a neat town. Oh, it used to be a pretty junky town, I'm telling you. Now they have people cleaning up there all the time. And
I was going to work this morning, and this guy was had a... Reminds me of the when you see those old movies, the 30s, you see this guy on that's what he's doing down there in front of Shoppers there. He had a big broom and he was
sweeping it off, huh?
Yeah.
Good.
Garbage.
Duck Moore is there working every day, and there is some other kids are working there. Paul Sims, I think it was. Paul Sims.
No, the boy from this Gent Fannister beer slinging in there.
What's his name? Ray Jean's Jack, yeah, Lorraine's boy. Ray Jean, you know him. He's working in the town now, yeah, right. But anyway, and then you had the BC Cafe. And what was there where they built the latest drugstore, which is the office now?
That's Lent. In the old days.
Yeah, I guess there was a hotel there at one time, but that's long before.
No, the hotel was on the corner where the drugstore was.
And we were here, it was Lent. But anyway, what's in the new drugstore now, right next to the cafe, to the Bussy Cafe?
That's Human Resources, I think.
And then, of course, but the Carl Biedermann building there, right next to the village office, you know, that was an open, and all they had was a blacksmith shop there. Yeah, that was the blacksmith shop. And they had the Shanghai Cafe. Greasy Joe was already there, you know, Shanghai Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that at that corner, as you go from Greasy Joe, the Shanghai Cafe, down to the river, to the library, that little plot of land there, which is a big wheat pile now, I just saw it this morning as I walked by it, that was a beautiful vegetable garden. Well, old Lee Chong had the cafe, you know, he kept the garden there, and he grew vegetables and everything else. Yeah, that's a bit of a wheat pile now. Too bad somebody doesn't do that.
Was the high school there?
It wasn't very big. Well, can you remember that day? How you went into town in the old days?
Coming from the back.
You came on, or you came from the ballpark, and you went down Smith's Hill.
Yeah.
First you had where the Salvation Army now, and then you got Smith's Hill. Yeah. But then you didn't go straight down to your building. You went all the way behind on the side hill, all the way behind where May Simpson lives. And then you came across at the end there, and you came into town at the far end of town by the Anglican Church. You must remember, I don't know. Maybe.
No, I remember just right down where that building just goes straight down.
Yeah, and then later on they figured, well, that was it was on the side hill. They just cut the hill, so the ice would come down, running down, or the water would run down and build an ice up on the road. So it was pretty treacherous in the winter to drive through there. You know?
But when I was working in the hospital, it wasn't that a car stand. You had to go. Was een road round de Engelijke Church.
Yeah,
dat so, was, yes. Maar dat slide wat je zei dat je komt bij May Simpson, dat de people was doing that. Dat was een little path of.
No, but anyway, they decided that was too difficult, you know. So then for a while they went right down by Smith Hill and came out to where you were.
Yeah.
Then that became they had an accident there or something. I forget what it was. And then they finally decided, well, by golly, we better do something more permanent. You know, tourism started. There was no tourism in those days, you know, hardly any. You didn't see any Winnebagoes or campers, and that was totally new. But so then they decided to build that road now, you know, the Dead Man's Corner there by Kassan. Yeah. Still a bad corner.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do about it. Somebody got killed there here a few months ago in that corner. And the public works was another interesting thing. The public works was there just about where. I would say, it's hard because it's changing, I would say just about by the entrance of Kasanis, where Earl Moldau lives,
mm-hmm.
There was the public works. It was just a bunch of old army barracks, you know, these old black army barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they shipped them in from wherever they had them, in Terre de Rupert or something like that, and that's where the public works was. Yeah.
Is that where you work at, huh?
Yeah, I had to cross the ferry and come into there, and from there on we went to work that summer of 53. Yeah. That wasn't too many years later that they changed that. I can't remember when they built up here in New Hazleton, but that's not too many years after that. That's been there for a long time. I guess they had, I don't know what they had. They had one grader, I guess, in those days, or maybe they had two, I forget now. And they must have had two trucks, I guess, or something. It was a small crew. There was I remember working with old Austin Matthews and Sam Hope and Ernie Stevens and Sam Hope taught me the first Indian words about, I can't remember now, but I was, you know, intrigued when they would talk among these old guys, when they talked amongst each other, that talked their language, you know, talked the Kitchen language. So I got curious, and you know, I said, now what does this mean, what does that mean, and they tried to teach me. I always broke my tongue out, I couldn't pronounce it. Yeah, they were nice old fellows.
So you were comfortable with being with the natives?
Pardon?
You were comfortable being able to communicate with the natives and work with them?
Yeah, why shouldn't I be? They're human beings.
Well,
they're a human being, of course. Right now they have ideas, I don't know, that I don't always totally agree with, let's put it that way. But anyway, we're not going to start any political debate here. But, you know, everybody has his own view on those things. But, I have no trouble getting along with anybody. But it's different whether your skin is white or red or brown or black. I don't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable with anybody. I have to look at other people as other people look, I hope, look at me, and it is just another human being that tries to do his best in the world. And no, there is no. But we all have to try and use our brains.
Mm-hmm.
That's the good Lord gave them us for.
Did you do any trapping or?
No, I don't.
The whole family tried and had to kill the first cow.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, right. No, we don't. We don't trap a fish. But.
The railroad was
there
again by
the time you got there. Railroad. Yeah, I know. If you want to talk to people, the railroad came through here, it seems to me, around 1909 or something.
I don't
think
she know that yet.
Yeah, but they will know that exactly. Yeah, I know that. I sort of felt bad that they took the station away here. You know, it sort of puts the whole town on a lower level, isn't it? Just like, well, you fellows don't count.
I was a bit upset about that when they took that railroad agent out. Well, I can see the CNR has is in the business of trying to make a dollar, you know, and if they have to pay an agent high wages and everything else, and there's just not the revenue for it, well, I don't blame them for it. And with modern computers and modern telephones, so they can... but still, you know, if you take, say, for instance, if they took the hydro away here, if they took the telephone away here, if they took the railroad away here, well, if they took the police away here, if they took the Forest Service away here, you have a feeling, well, don't we count here anymore? I had that feeling a little bit. I don't quite agree with it. Okay, so it costs a little bit. Everything nowadays is looked at in the token of a dollar.
Yeah.
If it costs too much money, well, get rid of it. You know, instead of saying, okay, well, sure, it costs a little extra, but you know, it's good for the community and it's a convenience for the people there. Keep it. Don't dump it. I know how upset Old Town was, Old Hadron was, when they took first the public works away. Then they took away the Forest Service. Was in Old Town.
Where is that?
That was right there where the health center next to the big pile in Old Town. There was a couple of little buildings, and that was the Forest Service. They took it away. Then they took away the BC Hydro. Well, they compromised. They said, okay, we wouldn't take it. It was at the hospital. The Hadleton wanted it closed, you see. But they were planning actually to put it in Newtown. So they compromised and put it where it is now, you know, the old BC Hydro in right across the Forest Service. Of course, it's gone now, but that's another thing. Now they're closing down the office of that.
The office,
not only that, the plant, because when Peace River Power came in, they didn't need those big engines there anymore, so they shut it down. Well, I can see that. But now you could still go in there and at least pay your bill or have a complaint or whatever it was, you know, at that office. Now that's taken away. Well, because it cost me a few dollars. So what? I mean, these things sort of I find that an insult is a big word, but I find it a bit insulting really to a town. You know, if they take everything away because it happens to cost a little money. It's not right. It's not right for them. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in wasting money. But on the other hand, you know.
You have electricity on your farm?
you kidding? We got the electricity. We moved in there in 19. I can tell you exactly. And don't forget to write it down. We got there in 1952. The power came in there in 1975.
Is that right?
23 years later, and the telephone came in 1979, 4 years after that. So for 23 years, we lived there with. Kerosene, no water, no bathroom, no light. Well, the bathroom was our own doing, but no. All we had was electric or gasoline, little gasoline motors to run this and the right milking machine and the bottle washing machine and the washing machine and I don't know what else. It was just gasoline motors all over the place. No, that was a long time. Finally, I don't know why that was a big change. They must have had a surplus of power or something like that, because when we were dairy farming, I wanted electricity very badly, because it meant we could have electric motors to do our milking, to do our bottle washing, to have lights in the barn and all over the place. For us, it was very, very important to have electricity there. We tried it and applied for it, and they wouldn't give it us. Okay, in a way, we could understand that, because there was lots of rural areas, people living out on farms way out in the country, that were in the same boat, that had no electricity and wanted it badly. Then all of a sudden, I guess it must have had something to do with the surplus of power they got from the Peace River. All of a sudden, the BC Hydro went into what they call a rural electrification program. And you go around the corner, you drive to Smithers or Talk, and you go out these back roads with all these farms, and you know, and there is just power lines all over the place, for miles and miles and miles and miles in. All of a sudden, everybody, there's nobody nowadays that is without electricity, unless you go up in the wherever, you know, but anybody that is settled down and has a public road running into it, be it gravel or whatever it is, has electricity. It's amazing. That was a total change. And for the area, a personal change for us was that bridge in Kittenger became very important to us. because we lost all that traffic. All the traffic that came from Kitmangai and wanted to go to Hazelden couldn't cross the river there. So they all, the ferry of course was out for years already. So they all came by the farm.
Yeah.
When the Alaska Highway flooded out in 1978, I guess it was big flood of 78. Yeah. All the traffic from the United States, from Eastern Canada, from Southern BC, that wanted to go to Alaska or the Yukon, came right by our farm.
Whereabouts is your farm?
Halfway between Hazelden and Kitmangai, on the north bank of the Skeena. You know Young Neil Stair, of course. You know Young Neil Stair. Well, we live a couple of miles downstream from him.
Is that right? Oh, yeah.
Same road. Yeah.
We used to. My aunt used to live there.
Who's that?
Louise. Her husband was what was his name?
Stan Pye.
Stan Pye. He's a Stan Pye.
That must be years and years ago.
Well, they just died in a car accident about.
But where did they live?
In Kitmangai.
Oh, no, but we don't live in Kitmangai. Yeah. We live.
It's on the last farm.
We live on the you know, well, near Stairs Farm. You know where it is? Have you been there? Well, we live a couple and a half miles downstream from him, further towards Kitmangai, further west. Yeah, right. But when that bridge came in 1970, that was in the late fall of 1975. They opened that bridge. Of course, it's been there for 12 years already. It's hard to believe. All the traffic from the north, from the villages, you know, they wanted to go to Smithers, they wanted to go to Hazelden, and they all came back. Yeah. The funny thing was, in the spring when the snow was gone, I would take 2 5-gallon buckets and walk the hayfield right alongside the road, and I would pick up empty beer bottles and empty pop cans and empty this and empty that, you know, and fill the 2 buckets right up just in that little few hundred yards of field, because people on Saturday night come back, you know, and they're drunk and they throw their thing in the field.
Yeah.
And we couldn't have a tractor running over the beer bottle, you know, you can't afford it. So I used to pick them up. And then sometimes I even had to stuff them in my shirt and in my pants pocket because the buckets were full, you know. Oh, God, yeah. Now you go in there in the spring and there's none.
Yeah.
Because people, if they want to go to town and have a good party, well, they take the highway, of course. They go on the pavement, they don't go on the back road.
Yeah.
Tourists, we see a few tourists go by. For the rest, that was, for us, was quite enough, not only because of the beer bottle, but we didn't like that traffic around too much. It creates a lot of dust, and it's just not quiet. Huh? So we were very, very happy when that bridge came in. Very happy. Now we'll...